And William will be here for 2 midsummers. That's the usual period of tutelage.
Indeed he will.
And you will be here as well. Genevieve Kavanagh, silence that evil tongue this instant. Genevieve danced across the grass.
He's handsome, he's handsome, she laughed. I've seen the way he looks at you, especially in those dresses you wear for the dances.
Her hands traced imaginary breasts over her chest. Louise giggled.
Devil child, you have a faulty brain. I'm not interested in William.
You're not?
No.
Oh, I like him, and I hope we can be friends. But that's all. In any case, he's 5 years older than me.
I think he's gorgeous.
Then you can have him.
Genevieve's face fell.
I'll not be offered anyone so grand.
You're the heiress, after all. Mother will make me marry some troll from a minor family, I'm sure of it.
Mother won't make us marry anyone. Honest to goodness, Jenny, she won't.
Really, truly?
Really, truly, Louise said, even though she couldn't quite bring herself to believe it.
Truth to be told, there weren't that many eligible suitors for her on Kesteven. Hers was an invidious position. A husband should hold equal status, but someone of equal wealth would have his own estate, and she would be expected to live there.
Yet Cricklade was her life. It was beautiful even in midwinter's long barren months, when yards of snow covered the ground, the pine trees on the surrounding wolds were denuded, and the birds buried themselves below the frost line. She couldn't bear the thought of leaving it.
So who could she marry?
It was probably something her parents had discussed, her uncles and aunts too, most likely.
She didn't like to think about what the outcome would be. At the very least, she hoped they would give her a list rather than an ultimatum.
One of the butterflies caught her eye, a geneered red admiral sunning itself on one of the glass blades. It was freer than she was, she realized miserably.
"Will you marry for love, then?" Genevieve asked, all dewy-eyed.
"Yes, I'll marry for love."
"That's super. I wish I were as bold."
Louise put her hands on the top rail of the fence, looking across the gurgling stream.
Forget-me-nots had run wild on the banks, their blue flowers attracting hordes of butterflies. Some time-distant master of Cricklade had released hundreds of species across the grounds. Every year they flourished, invading the orchards and gardens with their fluttering harlequin colours.
"I'm not bold, I'm a dithery dreamer. Do you know what I dream?"
"No."
Genevieve shook her head, her face rapt.
"I dream that Father lets me travel before I have to take on any of my family responsibilities."
"To Norwich?"
"No, not the capital. That's just like Boston, only bigger. And I'll be going there anyway for finishing school. I want to travel to other worlds and see how their people live."
"Gosh, travel on a starship? That's stupendously wonderful. Can I come too, please?"
"If I go, then I suppose Father will have to let you go when you reach your age.
Fair's fair."
"He'll never let me go. I'm not even allowed to go to the dances."
"But you sneak past Nanny and watch them anyway."
"Yes."
"Well, then, he won't let me go."
Louise grinned down at her sister's petulant tone.
"It's only a dream."
"You always make your dreams come real. You're so clever, Louise."
"I don't want to change this world with new ideas," she said, half to herself. "I just want to be allowed out, just once. Everything here is so duty-bound, so regimented. Some days I feel as though I've already lived my life."
"William could get you away from here. He could ask for a star voyage as a honeymoon. Father could never refuse that."
"Oh, you impudent baby ogress!"
She aimed a lazy swipe at her sister's head, but Genevieve had already skipped out of range.
"Honeymoon, honeymoon!" Genevieve chanted so loudly that even the nearby horses looked up. "Louise is going on honeymoon."
She picked up her skirts and ran, long, slender legs flying over the flower-laden grass. Louise gave chase, the two of them giggling and squealing in delight as they gallivanted about, scattering the butterflies before them. Lady Macbeth emerged from her final jump-in system, and Joshua allowed himself a breath of silent relief that they were still intact. The trip from Lalonde had been an utter bitch. For a start, Joshua found he neither liked nor trusted Quinn Dexter.
His intuition told him there was something desperately wrong about him. Wrong in a way he couldn't define, but Dexter seemed to drain life from a cabin when he entered. And his behaviour was weird, too. He had no instinct, no natural rhythm for events or conversation, as though he was working on a 2-second time delay to reality.